Baradara, a pretty good morning. My name's Auriel Miller. I'm the director of the IWA, the Institute of Welsh Affairs. For those of you who don't know us, we're Wales's leading independent think tank with a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and much further afield too. We're funded by our members, the events we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. This is our eighth Rethinking Wales panel discussion. We're running them on Thursdays at 11 o'clock. Before we get started, I'm just going to run through a little bit of housekeeping for you. You've probably noticed as you came into the Zoom call that participants are going muted by the host. We're going to use the Q&A section for questions. If you want to direct your question to a particular panelist, do please state their name. We really encourage you to engage with each other in the chat, because we're conscious now that in the 15th week of lockdown, we still can't meet up in person. Please remember that all chat questions, all the chat and the questions are recorded, and we're going to be keeping to an hour, but keeping the chat room open after midday so you can continue to connect with each other. Okay, so for those of you who haven't joined us before, we started this discussion and this series of discussions to shine a light on what matters to people most at the moment as we go through this extraordinary experience. We know that this new reality is changing all the time, and we also want to look further ahead than the immediate crisis. We're deliberately bringing people together because we're not able to meet in person. We'll hear from our panelists in a minute, but we also want to hear from you, please, in our chat room and on Twitter using the hashtag #RethinkingWales. Like I said, we're now in the 15th week of lockdown, and it can feel a lot longer than that for some people. And with many children returning to schools across Wales this week, joining key workers' children who've been there throughout, this event seeks to understand the profound effect the sudden arrival of COVID-19 and lockdown has had and will continue to have on their lives. With the unprecedented closure of school buildings across the country and adjusting to online learning, and a survey by University College London finding only 1.9% of Welsh pupils had four or more daily online lessons, compared with a UK average of 7%, coupled with lack of access to friends, family, normal routines being disrupted by everybody being in the same space for living, studying and working, changing financial situations as parents' jobs are put into question, and more worryingly, the removal of traditional external safeguarding measures for children whose home is not always a safe place to be. The question that we're asking today is, will COVID-19 have a longer lasting impact on the children's new normal than at first we might imagine? I'm really pleased to introduce today's panellists. We've got Vivian Lang, Policy and Public Affairs Manager from the NSPCC Cymru. Welcome. Mm-hmm. Rachel Thomas, Head of Public and Policy and Public Affairs from the Children Commission. Oh, I can't get my words out this morning. Children's Commissioner for Wales. Welcome, Rachel. Llechi Haf-William, who's the Welsh Youth Parliamentarian for the Vale of Glamorgan. Welcome, Llechi. And Dr. Dave Williams, Consultant Child and Adolescent Psychiatrist, who's an advisor to Welsh Government on Child and Adolescent Mental Health and Chair of Children in Wales. So, fantastic panel. Viv, we'd like to start with you, please. From the NSPCC's point of view, can you talk us through what you've been seeing in terms of the immediate impacts of the pandemic and the lockdown on children? What the longer term challenges are that it might throw up and how Wales should address them? And also, are there any positive changes that we should really try and keep once this crisis is over?
Okay then, I'm going to start then. What is the new normal for children, young people? Well, I would start by saying children's lives have changed overnight and the pandemic has upended the lives of all children, young people in Wales. And I would say they're the hidden victims of the crisis, and it's a potential disaster for them and our future generations. I mean, all children have missed out on months of education, and their development will be affected as they've missed out on play and social interaction. Many young people have used the word trapped to describe how they feel about being at home when they talk to Childline. And many tell us that they're struggling with anxiety and fear while being cut off from friends, family and support services. And it's put some children out of reach of for long periods of time from the adults who keep them safe. So I just want to give some context first, though, and I'm going to refer to, and I'm sure Rachel will later, the Children's Commissioner for Wales survey of children and young people in Wales. And they found that the majority of children and young people, 58%, were happy most of the time, and 84% felt safe most of the time. But that the corollary of that is that it means that 16% did not feel safe most of the time, and 2% have not very often felt safe. And I'm going to focus on these most vulnerable children and people for the rest of what I've got to say. As the leading child protection charity, we know that difficult family situations are likely to be intensified during this crisis. Before the pandemic, too many children were already living in homes that were not safe. And our research before the pandemic showed that 1 in 10 children experienced neglect, 1 in 5 domestic abuse, 1 in 20 child sexual abuse. And when you think about most child sexual abuse is perpetrated by someone known to the child, they're likely to be locked down with that perpetrator. And we know that the risks of abuse and neglect, problematic parental behaviour and domestic abuse are increased in stressful situations, which results in children not feeling safe and being harmed. So when we look at our evidence, and we've compared the calls after lockdown to before lockdown to Childline and our adult helpline for people concerned about a child. So our adult helpline since lockdown has recorded significant increases in concerns about physical and emotional abuse of children, about family relationships, and about parental health and behaviours such as substance misuse. When I look at Childline, as soon as lockdown was announced, there were weekly increases in counselling sessions delivered for the first 5 weeks before it stabilised. And we found that the proportion of counselling sessions that we've delivered to children and young people about mental health, suicidal thoughts and feelings, and family relationships have all increased significantly since lockdown. And there's also been a significant increase in counselling about abuse compared to before lockdown, in particular physical and emotional abuse. So our evidence shows that family relationships, problems with them, problematic parental behaviour and child abuse has increased during lockdown. And we know that there are going to be newly vulnerable children as a result of lockdown, families that were getting along, ticking along okay before the stresses of the pandemic, and that will have led to more difficult family situations. And of course, at the same time as risks have increased, many children have lost their crucial sources of support, such as getting out to schools, see grandparents, friends, leisure activities. And we do know that only a small proportion of vulnerable children attended school hubs. I mean, at the same time as this, all these counselling sessions to children and people were increasing, referrals to local children's social services significantly dropped, though I hear referrals have started to pick up. The impacts of abuse and neglect and traumatic experiences on children during lockdown are going to be wide-ranging and long-term. So one of the challenges Wales face as lockdown eases is planning for a spike in referrals to social services and ensuring that the resource is there to investigate and provide protection and support to children. And you must remember, when children are not happy and safe, they find it so much more difficult to engage in education, so their learning is affected. I mean, what I will say, I'm pleased to say that Welsh Government responded quickly and established a cross-departmental Vulnerable Children Working Group and an external advisory group on which we sit. And they are working to support professionals to identify and support children and people who've been traumatised by the experiences of lockdown. But what I'm going to be saying is that both Welsh Government and local authorities need to plan for this spike of referrals by resourcing children's social services, family support services, CAMHS, school counselling, and those specialist therapeutic services to support families and help children process their experiences and recover. I would say that all of our futures depend on how young people are supported to grow, develop and thrive. So we need to see a refocused attention on how children are supported to recover and thrive as we emerge from this crisis. I'd like to see an integrated approach with clear priorities, and this needs to be informed by the views of children and people themselves. And I would ask that the maximum level of resources are made available for children and that we are committing to investing in early intervention support. Have there been positive changes? Well, evidence from Childline shows that there's that counselling about bullying has reduced. And so we've got to hope that as we go back to more blended learning, that we can make sure that bullying doesn't reach the previous levels. And the other thing that's been positive is that it's how quickly children's support services have transformed into virtual support. And I think that those, you know, when we're talking about providing support digitally or virtually to children and young people, practitioners are potentially able to support more children as they don't have travel time. So there we are, that's my initial input.
Thanks very much indeed, Viv. I think that's a really interesting and important points you brought through. And I'd like to come back in the discussion to prioritisations, which I think is one of the key points that you're making there. Rachel, could we come to you next? You're the lead for policy and public affairs in the Office of the Children's Commissioner for Wales. We've heard a little bit about the survey there. You may want to bring out other things from it. Are there particular solutions and actions that you are also wanting to highlight? And give us your point of view, please.
Thank you, Auriel. So the role of the Children's Commissioner is to safeguard and promote the rights of all children in Wales. Things like human rights can often be the first thing to be overlooked in a crisis response. And although children have been spared the worst health effects of the coronavirus disease itself, they will have suffered enormously as a result of the lockdown. And we've already heard from Auriel and from Viv from the range of ways that they will have been affected. So as an office, we decided to find out how children were actually finding the lockdown period through our Coronavirus and Me nationwide survey. And we asked about a range of different topics themed around children's rights. And we had nearly 24,000 responses from children right across Wales. And, you know, it may not be a surprise, but the top three responses from young people who responded to say which measures that impacted on them the most in this period were 72% were concerned about not being able to spend time with friends, 59% not able to visit their family members, and 42% were really concerned about their school or college closing. And we noted in particular that young people of secondary school age had more negative feelings than younger children, and 16% of that cohort said that they'd felt sad most of the time during lockdown. And when we think about the challenges coming from this period, clearly there's been a massive disruption to education, and that isn't going to just be for this year's exam cohorts and students. The loss of teaching time and attendance at school will be impacting on development and social skills, as well as the more obvious things around the grades that are awarded, the chance to actually practice sitting an exam and get that experience for the future. And it highlights really the need to support vulnerable children and those with additional needs. And in our survey responses, only 17% of young people were actually pleased that their exams had been cancelled, and young people were much more likely to report that they felt uncertain or worried. Some were feeling quite angry and some were also feeling sad. And although the vast majority of children and young people reported that they were in touch with school during the period, the type of contact, the frequency and the quality of support being offered has varied enormously through the home learning period. And 54% of children and young people were really worried about falling behind in their education. And then alongside that, there are the concerns about children's mental health and well-being through the isolation aspects of lockdown. Mental health support has always been a key issue for our office. And actually last week we published our No Wrong Door report. We've been looking at how regional partnerships support children with complex needs, and particularly around emotional, behavioural and mental health support. This was clearly an issue before the crisis, but this period has really exacerbated problems through different ways to access key services. And the report made clear that we can't go back to old ways of working where families are being told that they're knocking at the wrong door and they're not able to get the support that they need. So when, you know, there are some positive changes that fit into how we look at what we'd like to do next in cracking that no wrong door system. And as Viv mentioned, the use of online technology has been really welcome. I mean, it can't be seen as a replacement for all services. So for children in care, it's been really valuable to be able to maintain family contact through these online mechanisms. But of course, that's not the same as seeing someone in person. And we're pleased that the government is now looking at ways to safely reintroduce face-to-face interactions with family members, but also with key professionals and support workers. And the introduction of online therapies and medical appointments has had a real benefit for some children and young people. Children often can't take themselves to a medical appointment and can be at risk of being struck off a list for not attending when there might be travel barriers or just anxieties about being seen going into a particular facility can really put people off from attending. So the use of online sessions is something that we definitely want to see continuing where it's right for those children and young people. We've also seen from our survey report that more than half of the children that responded said that they were playing more than usual and reported benefits from spending time with their family, learning new skills, enjoying the outdoors and doing daily exercise. And there's been a real relief for some children and young people from the pressures that they were feeling around mental health, and as Viv also mentioned, around bullying. But of course, that really tells us a bigger story about children's everyday experiences. And as we start to think what this new normal should look like, we have to make sure that we don't fall back into the old ways where these were harmful for children. So in terms of what we need to see now, we absolutely need to have a no wrong door approach for children who need help. Children and families should be able to get the help that they need, whoever they approach and wherever they do so. We need to make sure all children are re-engaged with their education as soon as possible, and again, to have the support that they need. Children's rights need to be being upheld wherever they are. So if time is being spent learning at home, then children need to be able to access support and have taught online lessons, as well as opportunities to mix with classmates in different ways to uphold not only their education rights, but also their abilities to socialise, to freedom of religion and expression, to access the care and support that they need, and to use the language of their choice too. And I think the survey in particular has once again highlighted that children's views absolutely should be being listened to and acted upon in this period so that their experiences can be addressed in the here and now. And I think the pandemic and the sort of pause and stopping and thinking about how we do things gives us a massive opportunity to do things differently and do things better for children. And the best way that we can do this is to listen to them and involve them in decisions about what comes next. So it can be their new normal and not the one that we think that they want, or not just falling back into the old ways of doing things. Let's be creative and make public services better for all our children. And I'm really pleased that we've got Slakey here as well from the Youth Parliament to come and bring some of those live experiences. So I'll end my contribution there.
Great. Thanks very much indeed, Rachel. Slakey, you're 15. In year 10, going on to year 11 at a Welsh medium school in Barry, and experiencing all of this disruption firsthand. You know, when we spoke before to get ready for today's conversation, you know, I'm obviously not expecting you to speak on behalf of all children in Wales, but if you could just share as much of your own experience as you're comfortable sharing, that'd be really, really great. So could you tell us a bit about what it's been like for you? What sort of challenges you've faced in terms of schooling and adapting as a family? What's been good, what hasn't been good, and let's take it from there.
Well, yeah, thank you. I am 15 and I'm in school, and I am obviously just one of like all of the children in Wales. So everyone's experience during lockdown is going to be completely different to each other, even though we're all going through the same experience. All of our experiences are going to be different. And the situation is just changing every day. Even though every day is starting to feel, well, not starting, it does feel the same and repetitive. The situation is changing all the time, and we are learning to adapt. And even though it doesn't feel like it, we are adapting to it every day. The situation is changing so rapidly, so much that it's kind of for my age group especially, and just for kids in general, really for young people, it's kind of, because the situation is changing so often and so much, can get quite overwhelming for a lot of people. Not even just young people, and that means that everything, you have to adapt, and you have to adapt the way that you approach everything everything in your life, really, because to stick to the rules and keep yourself safe and your family safe, as well as just taking care of everything in general. So, my experience during lockdown has, on the whole, been quite positive. And I know that I'm only one of the many people, so I only really know what I've been experiencing during lockdown.
Sure.
And I know that everyone is going to be in different situations going into it. So it's not something that anyone has ever experienced before, not in the same way. And so everyone going into lockdown, has had a different mindset about it, and everyone's got a different situation going into it. So everyone's way of coping is going to be different. Everyone's going to be gaining and getting different stuff out of this experience. For me, I'm in year 10, so I'm looking at working towards my GCSEs. And when lockdown started, my parents, my dad would think that every child in school would love this just to get time off school. But in some cases, that might be the case. But in others, like year 11s and year 10s, and as you were saying with the results of the surveys, there are lots of mixed emotions, because it affects in different ways, because it can have a positive impact as well as a negative one. I know that I'm year 10, so I'm going into year 11, I'm going to do my GCSEs, and a lot of the exams for my year have been cancelled, or we have to decide whether we do the year 10 exams as well as the year 11 exams, or just the year 11 exams. Yeah. And it's really hard to tell at this stage whether we're going to benefit from doing both of the exams or just one set. And it's just everyone is kind of nervous and, just worried if we're going to be able to fit everything into one year, and just after missing all of this much, and just even though we know that it has been done in the past, but not in the same way, and it's just so
the uncertainty is really difficult, isn't it? That level of uncertainty is really hard.
And everyone's decisions are going to be different. So no one's choice is going to be the same. So there's a lot of uncertainty of how we're going to approach our GCSE in the whole. Yeah. And there's just uncertainty with everyone of how we're going to move forward in general. And as I said, the situation is changing every day, even though we might not notice it. It's changing
when we talked on Monday, we talked a bit about some of the good stuff that you've appreciated from being do you want to share some of that?
The lockdown for me has been quite positive, because I've been able to because my family are usually we have quite a busy routine. So daily life is normally rushing around, and I am really grateful for all of the opportunities that we get, and we have the chance to go and experience different activities and different clubs and go to school every day. So we were kind of living life at 100 miles an hour, just doing things all the time. So the lockdown has given us a chance to just step back and take time together and spend time together as a family. And that's been really nice because my sister has come back from university. So she's been with us the whole time, and my brother, and so we're all together. And we get to see our parents' jobs as well, because we're all living in the same house. Well, we are always, but we're just here all the time now. So we kind of worked into a routine of how we all work together. So it's given us a chance to see what our parents do and how they get like do their jobs at home, because my mum works a lot from home. She is a counsellor, so she has clients and stuff like that. So she's doing a lot of work in her office. My dad is a translator, and because the but for the area, not so he's, and because the translating work has been slow because there aren't meetings in person anymore, he's also taken up a job as a delivery driver. So we've been able to see how we contribute to like our house and our family and how we work and just work into our routine. It's almost as if we've kind of forgotten how it used to be, because our routine is kind of just so, well, we're used to it now, and as soon as it as soon as everyone's gotten into like a routine and just a role, everything's gonna be changing again. And that is obviously quite hard, but for everyone. But during lockdown, it's also given more time for just thinking space and just more headspace. So I feel like I have actually grown as a person, and I know that sounds kind of, well, yeah, but
sounds very mature to me, Clakey, actually.
Thank you. But because of the extra headspace, which I think is, well, the time that we've had, it has given everyone a chance to get more headspace. For me, it has given me a lot of time to reflect on things and just look at things and work on myself as a person. So I do think that aspect has had a positive impact. And I think it's something that we could still carry on to do, making sure that we have time to ourselves and just time, well, for our minds, time to reflect, after lockdown. Just I think that is one of the positive outcomes that the lockdown has had.
I'm going to come back to you. Oh, I'm going to come back to you in a bit when we come back to sort of going back to school, because I know you've gone back to school this week as well. Right now, I'm going to go to Dave. We're at a critical juncture, aren't we? This is a critical juncture in terms of everything, every aspect of our lives. And you know, Dave, your experience both as a practitioner, as also a chair of Children in Wales, and I understand that you were barely retired when COVID-19 hit and you stepped back into the fray. Can you talk us through the kinds of things that you're seeing both as a practitioner and that overview in terms of the organisation that you chair, please?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that it's been a period of massive change for the whole country to something that people don't quite know what they were trying to adapt to. So it was a new threat that people had, that the information came through, and the rapidity of the change, the suddenness of the change, the fact that the people who we normally expect to know what they're talking about and have some idea of the answers didn't actually have the answers and weren't sure themselves has really made us really shaken and turned over society. And when there's good change or bad change, that shakes us and makes us feel uncertain and makes us feel anxious. As I say, I retired on the 13th of March, fully intending to come back, fully intending to have a holiday actually, and came back within 3 weeks with all the plans just for children in Wales, the plans we had on the 13th of March, it was Friday the 13th, maybe I should have picked a different date, was completely different by Tuesday the 16th. And we were making the arrangements to work with Children in Wales to do that joint report on children's views on their response to that lockdown. And we had to scramble. And it almost felt there was a change every 2 days. And we were really grateful after 3 or 4 weeks when the music slowed at least. I think what has become clear is the importance of what is it in the education system and what is it in family life that's important. And actually those relationships and peer reviews, peer relationships and support are more important than being a knowledge shifting device where you speak it out the mouth of a teacher or off a blackboard into the head of a child who then puts it on a piece of paper. It's clearly important for those who've got exams because that's what they're going to be tested on. But I think some of the direction of travel in education as to having a wider understanding is really, really, it's almost proving concept, but we do need to give as soon as possible certainty to those people who are having specific transition points coming up in the near future. And that transition, that certainty is still being developed. The other thing I see both in work and in Children Wales is this is a problem that has exacerbated inequalities and injustice in our society. Mm-hmm. So the people who are already having a bad time through health, economic prosperity and poverty, access to IT, are suffering even more than they were before. However, there are some people where, as Cheki has just said, where the opportunity to spend time on relationships, to work functionally as a family, to work functionally as a group, has really, really well. So we've seen some good companies who've actually done really well in this, partly because we've had lots of meetings cancelled. Not only is that the time that's been freed, but the opportunity to say no but has been removed. So we've been able to implement things like IT rollouts, implement use of WhatsApp in the health service, that we would have always found a reason, that some guy would have found a reason why it was unsafe to do so in any other area. And actually by trusting staff and families to work together, actually you manage the risk because you're focusing on the needs of the young children. That's where it's happened in the good services. Sadly, there's some services that haven't done. The long-term issues obviously is how do you recover from that inequalities and injustices over so many when there has been grief, when the economic impact will be poverty, when we are still coming to the certainty, we're still 3 or 4 months at least off, given sort of some uncertainty. And we're in a period of mankind's history where that's quite unusual. So actually, in the past 40 years, it's been relatively stable. We haven't had health threats. We haven't had big illnesses that have, essentially wiped large populations out. Polio, smallpox. It's quite unusual. And as a result, to a certain extent, as a society, we are less equipped to deal with it than ever before. However, we're better equipped to actually adapt and learn because we do have what we're using today in an ability to share information, to work together. From a policy point of view, what we're working both in my clinical job, but also with Welsh Government and Children in Wales, to say what are the key things that really matter. And actually some of the stuff is how we work collaboratively better, focusing on what makes the difference for the young people, rather than always retreating to some of those meetings and things like that. So I say that's just brief, echoing what's already been said really, but wanting to give people opportunities to talk.
Thank you very much indeed, Dave. I'm going to start to open it up for a conversation amongst us on the panel. I'm not going to come to each of you with every single question, but I'll try and give you a heads up if I'm coming to you next, because I know that those sort of cues on a panel are harder to read when you're doing things virtually. I'm interested in lots of the things that you've brought through. I want to focus for a little bit on the return to school now for the children who haven't been in school buildings but have been doing online work from home. And I have a vested interest in this. I have three children of 13, 8, and middle one's 11 now, I also have to think. So the middle one is transitioning. So your point, Dave, around the transition to high school and what that means, and the opportunities for making those memories of a rite of passage for many, many children. What are your concerns about that return to school now? Faithy, when you and I spoke earlier this week, you hadn't yet gone back to school, I don't think, but you were talking about how it felt, you were thinking it was going to feel really different. If you could tell us a little bit about how it did feel, and then let's come on to what role is that? Is there more of a role, particularly for mental health professionals in schools? You know, I imagine that the nurture provision that was already there is still there at the moment, but is there a bigger role for mental health professionals in school when we come back to thinking about the autumn and what next? So, Clayke, could you tell us a little bit about what it was like? You were in school this morning. What was it like?
Yeah, so I went back on Monday as well, but just for a little bit, but that was, I think, after, yeah, I can't remember. But yeah, so we only went back for about 3 hours, like this morning as well. And well, the whole just system has completely changed, obviously, to fit the rules and stay 2 meters apart. So it's just a completely, it's just, well, how everyone describes it is just really weird, because it's never felt like that before. We've just arrived in school, and our school has had a lot of building work being done. So we've had about 3 new buildings or something. So the whole layout of the school has also changed. So arriving in school on Monday was completely different. I do like about our school that we were welcomed in slowly. We're being like, so our year 10s, so year 10, going in twice a week for the mornings, and year 12s are as well. The other years are just going in once a week. And it's just slowly, they're not, they're encouraging people to come into school, but not forcing or anything, because it is important that we approach it slowly and just get slowly back into our normal routines, even though we don't know if they're going to go back to normal, really, for a long time. So yeah, when I went back to school, it was actually quite calm. Everyone was quite nervous the night before, and everyone, Monday was the first time that anyone came into the school, pupils wise, because I know that the teachers have been going in on some days to school, just to do some stuff, kind of, they've been running sessions with toddlers and things like that, which is obviously another case, and that is really hard to keep social distancing measures as well with toddlers and little children. we all had our options on Monday, and our teachers were kind of, we're saying that they weren't going to be angry at anyone who hasn't necessarily done all of the work, thing, because they don't know what anyone's situation has been like, and if they just started shouting at everyone, it wouldn't really do much. It wouldn't really do
much. Thank you. That's great. Thank you very much indeed. Let's pick up on some of those themes. So the sudden change, the stresses of the external environment, and this continued uncertainty. Normally, when we talk about resilience and how we adapt, you have one of those things happening at any one time, but at the moment we've got all three of them. So there's a key thing around resilience as children go back to school and deal with the uncertainty of what was a very certain environment when they went to school. They knew what they were getting. Viv, can I come to you about that in terms of that return to school at the moment? And Rachel next, please.
Well, It's interesting, isn't it? It's so lovely to hear from you, Lakey, about, you know, the way you've been welcomed back in, and also that teachers haven't been upset, because some children perhaps haven't had the support that they needed to do the schoolwork. Some will have had experiences during lockdown that have been stressful. So it's really good to hear that. And you absolutely know that our education professionals will be doing the best for their pupils. I mean, we know from Childline that schoolwork and worries about schoolwork have become one of the top 10 concerns that that we've talked to children about. And I suppose really what we do want to make sure is that, you know, teachers will be one of the few adults that a child's regularly seeing outside of their family. So we just need to make sure, you know, make sure they've got the information they need, the support they need to, if they have any disclosures from children about abuse and neglect, that they have the support they need to refer and get the support that children and young people need.
Thank you. Rachel?
I wanted to pick up really on the point that David raised about growing inequalities. Like, we know that there will be a number of children who don't return in this summer period, and that could be for a myriad of different reasons. So there's obviously the anxieties around health and the changes, as Lakey's talked about. There'll be people who are shielding either themselves or their families. There might be some who have additional learning needs and were having support before the lockdown and might not have had that support over the summer and might be worried about what that support will now look like when they go back. But also practical things like arranging for school lunches and school transport, all of that is so disrupted that if we have children who aren't going back in this catch-up check-in period, then we need to understand why that is, so that then come September, we can be reaching out to more of them to either support them to continue to learn at home if that's what's working best for them, or try to find ways to overcome the barriers or the anxieties that they're facing so that they can start to have that gradual reintroduction to the whole school experience and environment, really.
Thank you. Yes, I want to go to thinking about, there's a question here from Dr. Khan in the chat. Could we rethink what the traditional education experience could be like in schools? We're looking at September. Dave, I'm going to come to you with this, a sort of a continuation of this blended learning. And yet we know that there are also key issues around digital exclusion at the moment, with children either not having access to the internet, but being less familiar, or being in households where the grown-ups don't know or can't help, or it's in another language, and they're less familiar with kind of more professional platforms like Zoom or Teams or whatever is being used, than they are with sort of WhatsApp or FaceTime. So there's a whole bundle of stuff there to unpick around what gadgets people are using, the space, the physical space of where they have to work. Are they in a room together? Do they have a sibling who can help them? Are their parents working? All those sorts of things. Can they get help from their parents? Are they available? You know, education is going to, learning and training is going to look very, very different. We're learning all sorts of other stuff at the moment, but what is the school role around education? What are the opportunities here for recasting it very differently?
I think it's the interesting point, of course, from a COVID point of view, the risk to the children is fantastically low, and we've probably reached the tipping point where the risk from COVID is less than the risk of these emotional and psychological upset to the children. The issue is with the risk is more with the staff, and I saw some comments earlier about actually everybody's been affected. The staff of schools have been affected. They need the support, as do the staff in health services who've been supported, seen some terrible things, but have also experienced in their families. We're not separate groups of tribes. I think we've been quite good in Wales about developing the, you know, curriculum and education through play. And we've got some quite ambitious plans to widen up how we learn. We've known for a long time children learn in different ways, not just through your ears and your eyes looking at words. And yet the traditional model of teaching and testing has continued for ages. And maybe this is a provocation to speed those changes up and really start thinking, and a more rounded approach to what education is, how you teach, how you can learn in the outdoors. Ultimately, access to IT support, access to support for families if they're going to be the home. Again, noticing in the comments, particularly when you send your children to Welsh medium school, perhaps, and you yourselves are not at the level of Welsh that your child is, we need to be better at providing the resources. A lot of groups are looking about how we have used Hub and different platforms to have teaching packs available in YouTube clips and things like that. I think we need to be far, we need to have out off the shelf stuff, but we also need to make, coming back to my point, the most vulnerable, we need to think about how we enable. And that involves working with internet providers so that the broadband and Wi-Fi reaches certain communities as a community service, not because it's going to make them a lot of money, and then providing with equipment to allow children to use and families to use that so they can benefit from the broadband. Some of that is going on, so it's not as if we're starting from stationary, but that needs to be accelerated so quickly if we're going to have, as you say, a more blended point learning. But I think we can do more blended learning by learning outdoors and in a more interactive way anyway, before we get to the IT solutions.
Yeah, and do you see, Dave, Rachel and Viv, Rachel, I'll come to you first on this. Do you see other places doing that really well, that blended learning? Because I know that Hub has been, you know, has been in place for a little while, and that was already an advantage that it was already, that it was in place. But do you see other countries or other parts of the UK doing that really well that we can learn from? Because I think the point around, you know, and it's worth stating again, you know, everybody's affected by this. Teachers are affected by this. They're having to deal with also homeschooling their own children as well sometimes, who may be at a different school, let alone what else is going on in their own families too. So it's very, you know, of all the times, we cannot take a sort of single kind of sectoral approach to these things. We've got to take a broader, more holistic perspective. Where's doing it well, Rachel?
If you look at the other UK nations, we've seen, you know, a flurry of announcements about children going back full time in September in the other nations. And I think that seems to be perhaps more based on how they've struggled to do that blended learning, and rather than explore that more fully, it's perhaps just a reversion back to the old ways of working because they know how to do that. Whereas, as you say, we've got the tools in the Hub platform that we've got all across Wales, and all children and all teachers and other workers have access to that to be able to provide the support, but we perhaps haven't made the best use of those facilities yet. So there are really safe ways to do live interactive online lessons, and that could be a way to link up the children who are in the school in their small groups, could then link up with the children who are still at home. So you've got the interaction, the ability to ask questions in real time and not just receive a massive long list of tasks on a piece of A4 paper with lots of words. It's really off-putting to people. And if you've got dyslexia or other learning difficulties, then you're not being able to access the learning when it's just on a piece of paper. So I'm not sure that anyone's necessarily cracked it particularly well. And I think people are reverting to type in the other UK nations as the best way to try and overcome these problems. Whereas there may be we've certainly got the tools at our disposal, and we just need to be making better use of them here in Wales, I think.
Okay, and capturing that learning as we go along too. Viv and Dave, you know, we've had a lot of focus on schools so far in the conversation today, but there are obviously lots of young people who are going to be in further education, work-based learning, or not in education too. How can we ensure that they don't miss out on their opportunities at this particular point in time, and particularly people who are vulnerable and potentially further from the labour market as they reach the end of their education as well? Viv, can I come to you first, please?
Well, I suppose really I would like to see a focus on those most vulnerable children and young people. We're already expecting there to be a bit of a gap between the amount of learning that vulnerable children have been able to do at home with those compared to those who are more advantaged with all the facilities, living in less cramped homes with all the IT equipment. So I would like to see a real focus on the needs of vulnerable children and young people. And also making sure, even if we're moving towards a more blended learning approach in the autumn term, that they have the support, the equipment, the IT, the broadband, the everything they need to enable them to catch up. So that's what I'd like to see.
Okay, thank you. Dave, from your perspective.
Yeah, I think, well, firstly, being proactive rather than waiting for people to come to is really important. Mm-hmm. We know where people are coming. We know children who've just left care, people in youth, just, there's a whole group of people. We know when people reach the age of 16, it's not a surprise. They've had a birth, they got born 16 years ago. We need to be better at following them through. And I think it's also making sure we have the right, we invest in that. We have it, we tend to only invest in things with concrete outcomes. So invest in things that will get you an exam result, or invest you in things that get a clinic appointment, as opposed to invest in those relationships. And yeah, one of the things difficult for school will be to, they're having to make cuts to their budget all the time, rather than do the job well and have that wider approach to what education means. I'm particularly thinking in this group is the youth services across Wales, who are fantastic at engaging and young people being the sensible adult in their life. And if there's a sensible adult in your life in a good relationship, the other services can work with you to support you and take you through. Yeah, you need housing and things like that, but there's an opportunity to do that. It's not an insurmountable problem if you were to invest in it, but we don't. We cut the services because we can't see a nice concrete outcome from within 6 months of making that meeting.
That comes back, Rachel, to your no wrong door approach, doesn't it, really? So thinking about the way those services all wrap around a child or a young person and the way in. Are there practical things that you want to see Welsh Government investing in? Because I think the big challenge will be prioritisation of where the funding goes. Everybody's priorities are rising to the top, and how you make those decisions across the board is going to be tricky. I don't envy them that decision as well. What would you want?
I think the key thing to emphasise with the no wrong door approach is that it isn't necessarily about always investing in new things. It's just about stopping and thinking how we do things differently and bringing people together in multi-agency teams. So the examples that we share in our report around the models used in Gwent, where you have a range of services that come together on a weekly basis, and rather than saying, oh, this child doesn't fit into our service, this child doesn't fit into our service, the conversation is more about what service can we offer and what does it look like, and things like youth services and other provisions in the community, not just your traditional mental health services and social care services in the way that we understand them. So in terms of the approach that we're looking for, it's much more about, to pick up on the term that Clakey used earlier, that having that reflection and time to have that headspace to think about how we do things differently, and actually seizing that opportunity to bring people together. It doesn't mean funding bids and like Dave said, sort of evaluated outcomes of things. Bring people together, give it a try, and the feedback from the families and the children themselves will tell you whether that's been a good thing. And we shouldn't be focusing on sort of the hard target things like bringing down waiting lists. We should be focusing on, does this child actually feel better as a result of this intervention?
So what we measure and how we measure it, and what I'm putting our money where our mouth is on that school. I'm really conscious, this is the first time we've done the Rethinking Wales sessions on this new expanded webinar platform. We've got loads of questions that have come through. We haven't got to them all, so I'm going to pick up one of the questions from Katie Palmer, which was asking around, Katie was asking about, and it's a question to you, Clakey, in terms of food, a really, you know, central part of families and the day as well, and certainly in my household, what's for lunch, Mum, has become a key question. Putting food on the middle of the day being one of the things I won't be sorry to stop doing. But Clakey, for you, has there been a difference in terms of how you eat, how you spend time together, eating, cooking, baking? We had lots of stuff at the beginning of lockdown around all of that. And is there something from that you think is something you want to keep?
Well, it's quite hard actually, because for my family, we have done this thing where we would all take turns making different meals. We found some recipes online and we all got to choose them. And that was really nice because, like, we got time to have meals together and everything. Because my dad is obviously taking up the job as a delivery driver as well, his routine has sometimes gone into the night, so we haven't always been able to have meals all together. And sometimes when we're all working at the same time, we all tend to kind of just go and get food for ourselves as well. And I feel like a lot of people have brought up that that because we're spending a lot more time at home, we're also going to the kitchen a lot more and getting more snacks and just snacking a lot. And especially with people my age, just teenagers as well, body image is a really big thing, and just everything about it. I know that everyone thinks about it all the time. I do. So eating is something that a lot of people kind of have to come to terms with, like a healthy, balanced diet. And the lockdown, in some cases, some people have gotten to try new recipes and try new healthy eating. In some cases, people have been snacking more and, it's kind of just about finding the right thing. And lockdown has affected eating in different ways. For me, it's kind of mixed because I have been snacking more, but I've been eating meals with my family as well. So it's kind of, we've been the shopping as well. My dad has been doing it because he's been going out. So then it was just kind of one person leaving the house. So that was what worked for us. But now my mum is helping her friend as well because helping her friend because she can't leave the house. She's she's got cancer. So mum is helping her friend with her shopping as well. Food, school meals and stuff. School meals were what a lot of people were relying on as well. And I know that without the school meals, a lot of people are struggling with food as well, with where to get food. And that shouldn't be a thing that people should need to worry about.
You're absolutely right. It's not right, and it's not fair. And I know there was a lot of talk early on in lockdown, a lot of different arrangements going on around local authorities, and you know, we would certainly be in favour of cash transfers to families before anything else to give people the ability to choose what's right for them and to maximise that dignity of their own choice. I'm conscious it's midday. I'm going to come to Viv, Rachel, and then Dave, please, in terms of what are you going to take away from this conversation? I'm really conscious often in these conversations that a whole ream of other stuff opens up, and we only have an hour, and there are, you know, five of us here having this conversation. So I'm conscious of a lot of things that are undiscussed. What are you going to take away from today in terms of something that you personally can do to help make this new normal, which is only going to be temporary because it will keep changing, but what are you going to do to help make this new normal for children as smooth and as safe as possible? Viv, please.
Oh, well, I suppose really we are going to still keep, we're providing lots of information to Welsh Government. We're working alongside them, giving them the information we've got so that we can try and ensure that those most vulnerable are recognised and supported going forward. That's, I guess, what we'll do.
Thank you. Rachel, what are you taking away from today's conversation?
I think the strongest thing really is that reminder that the experiences vary enormously, but the inequalities that are really rising to the top of these discussions are things that we can't let continue. So whether that's the holiday hunger, the digital access, all those kind of things. And from a rights perspective, that's exactly what the office and I will continue to press government on, really, to make sure that that gap doesn't grow.
Thank you. And one of the questions that came through was also about the different geographical dimensions between urban children in urban areas and children in rural areas, and the attention that's going to be given. Dave, how about you?
First of all, I think making sure that young people and families come with us on providing the solutions. We need to involve them as we learn more things, involving them so that we can develop the risks and the plans together rather than having things solutions given to you almost as fait accompli. That'll be unusual because that's not how we do it, so there'll be a bit of anxiety up front. And secondly, just to re-echo that we do need, whilst we don't have a one size fits all, we need to learn better on an all Wales basis. We need to learn better across other countries, and there's all sorts of things Scandinavian countries, etc., do. They pay a lot of tax for it as well. But the stuff that we do quite well within Wales that doesn't happen 3 miles down the road, and we don't have the opportunity to do that. The priority is too great. We need to get on and start moving on and rolling things out, work, adapting it for your area, but get on and do it.
Great, thank you very much. Really good call to action. So some of the things I'm going to take away from this are around voices and people's experiences shaping what comes next in all sorts of different ways. That learning point, the adaptation isn't going to stop now, it's going to continue over the next, certainly weeks, months, and possibly years into whatever our new world is going to be like as we live alongside this virus. Issues around funding and funding priorities, and where Welsh Government and local authorities choose to put their money, and the impact that has on organisations and on individuals and on children and young people in particular in terms of this conversation. Thank you very much indeed to all of our panellists this morning and to everybody joining us too. If you want to receive early notifications of future IWA events and recordings of all of our Rethinking Wales sessions, do please join us as a member on iwa.wales, about us, support us. You can play your own part in supporting an open, politically independent organisation at a crucial juncture for Wales. We're going to say goodbye now, but we're going to leave the chat room open so that you can swap contact details if you wish to, and to capture any other thoughts or suggestions you may not have had time to do during the conversation. I'm also aware that using this new webinar means you can't all see each other, and so that can be a bit disconcerting. So we'll be looking at that. So do please give us any feedback on things that we can do differently or do better next time around. We also want to continue to learn and adapt. I'm particularly grateful to Tlaiki William for joining us today. Thank you very much indeed. I'd like to say a big thank you, big diolch. Also to Vic Blaine, Rachel Thomas and Dave Williams. Thank you very much indeed, all of you, and I hope you have a good rest of the day. Thank you. Goodbye.